my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, happy new year and welcome to episode 111 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. This week's show is called Ask My 1-2-3 Cents. I posted this up on the Facebook and Twitter accounts for my 1-2-3 Cents and my own accounts, and just started soliciting some questions, and actually the interaction was pretty good, and I got several people to engage and ask questions. So this week, that is what I'm going to be doing, answering your questions. But before we get to the questions, I want to thank you all once again for your support. My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, has been around just over 2 years now, and we've seen some steady growth with it, and I appreciate those who listen on a weekly basis and share it. And if you're a new time, first time listener, thanks for being here. And be sure to come back and check it out, because I do have guests usually here on the show. Next week, by the way, the guest is UFC Hall of Famer and former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Dan the Beast Severin. We talked. I've already recorded it. The interview is in the can. We go for almost an hour, and he shares a lot of great insight into not only the UFC world, but also some of the behind the scenes that he was dealing with as NWA Heavyweight Champion and working with WWE. We talk about Ken Shamrock, Brock Lesnar, all that good stuff as well. So be sure to tune in next week right here on my 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. But this week, let's get to questions. And lots of fans, and some who aren't even really necessarily fans. And that's where I'm going to start with Tom Harness, who is a friend of mine. We do Craft Beerkins together, so be sure to check out Craft Beerkins on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well, just like my 1-2-3 Cents. But Tom asks, how can wrestling stay relevant and grow in 2017? In your opinion, what would you do differently? He asked the question because of how the NFL ratings have dropped off this year, or I guess in 2016, actually. Well, I think that the WWE, for example, has done a lot in 2016 to stay relevant. They have made a lot of changes, have tweaked some things with the introduction of the cruiserweight division, you know, developing a new show, the 205, on the WWE network. What they've done with the women's wrestling movement has been phenomenal. I would almost argue that that is probably the biggest change of 2016. The biggest impact on wrestling was the fact that they recognize women's wrestling as women's wrestling again. It's no more divas, and the new championship and the emphasis on letting the women go out there and have quality matches. Charlotte and Sasha, for example, main eventing at Hell in a Cell. They've done a lot in a short amount of time to kind of develop and reintroduce fans to women's wrestling over divas. Now, what can other companies do? Because Tom did say, how can wrestling stay relevant? I think that a lot of the smaller independent companies, and they all pretty much do a good job of differentiating themselves. For a long time, I thought TNA was too much trying to be like WWE version 2.0 or WWE Lite. You know, these companies need to develop a separate identity, continue to grow, develop, work at coming up with their own wrestlers or superstars or whatever term you want to use to describe the men and women who are getting in there and wrestling every week. And, you know, keeping it fun, but not making it, you know, it is entertainment, but it's also athletics. It's you know, showmanship, not making it so over the top cheesiness or over the top violent. I know some companies still do the death matches, and that's never been my thing. You know, more power to them, more power to you if you're a fan of that. It's just not been anything that I've ever been a part of or wanted to be a part of. So I would just say, to stay relevant or to keep doing things, find your own identity. And I would say that for just about any business or brand out there. Find your own identity. Find out what the fans who are paying like and love, and work with that and continue to grow and continue to develop and keep it, you know, moving forward to the next year. TNA, the Broken Matt Hardy stuff, they've done a good job of kind of reinvigorating themselves and changing things. So that would be, I guess, the short answer, or maybe in this case a long answer to that question. Robbie Thompson asks about the history and prestige of the now defunct Missouri State Heavyweight title. At one time, it was a stepping stone to the NWA World title, but fell off in the 1980s. What happened to it, and when was it created? I remember as a kid, some of my very first, it was actually my first NWA show, was when the Missouri State, or the Missouri Heavyweight Championship was still being defended. And I don't recall right off the top of my head. I want to say it was either Dick the Bruiser, or it may have been Wahoo McDaniel was holding that championship at the time. But I wasn't around much longer after that. That was in February of 1985 that I went to my first NWA show, and it was actually my second live wrestling show ever. So, but I did do a little research and found on the website Missouri-titles.com, they have the history of the Missouri Heavyweight Championship. Now, according to this site, the title was first developed in 1899 and was held by a man named George Baptisti. I think I'm saying that right. And he held the title for 11 years. He held it until 1910. Then the belt fell off, and it was redeveloped and reintroduced in 1921. A man named Jack Reed held the championship, and then it stayed around for quite some time. The likes of, if you're a longtime wrestling fan, Lou Thesz held that championship. And as Robbie mentioned in his question, it was a stepping stone to the NWA World Heavyweight title. And it really was. It was defended off and on. Cowboy Bob Orton. And a lot of these title defenses and changes happened either in St. Louis or in St. Joseph, Missouri. Bob Orton held it for a bit. Harley Race, who we know went on to become a 7-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Johnny Valentine, Terry Funk, Gene Kaniski, Dory Funk Jr., Bob Backlund, who went on to become the WWF World Heavyweight Champion, Dick Slater, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Well, he wasn't Million Dollar Man then, but Ted DiBiase, Dick Murdoch, as I mentioned, Dick the Bruiser, the Von Erich brothers, Kevin and Kerry Von Erich both held it. Ken Patera, Jack Briscoe, who was also a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Ric Flair, who was the all-time great, in my opinion. And he held the title. David Von Erich, I think I mentioned Kevin and Kerry. David also held it. David was one of those guys who, had he lived, there was a lot of talk that he would have gone on to become a great NWA World Heavyweight Champion as well. They were really working with him. Now, when I, like I mentioned, I was there and saw a title defense, and it looks like it was actually, might have been at that time period, it was Harley Race still, who was the Missouri Heavyweight Champion. He lost it to Jerry Blackwell. I remember those two kind of feuding at that time. Harley Race was the last Missouri Heavyweight Champion until the championship was retired in February of 1986. And that was because Jim Crockett Promotions, who owned the NWA at the time, they bought the St. Louis offices. And then, of course, they had their own titles, their own wrestlers and whatnot. So the championship went away. Then it was resurrected again in July of 2002 and defended off and on for several years. Actually, it's still being defended according to this site. But it's also going, they're going into Missouri, or I'm sorry, they're going out of Missouri and into parts of Illinois, Kansas, and even Tennessee, as far south as Tennessee. West Virginia also has a championship change. But right now, according to this site, Devin Spade is the current Missouri Heavyweight Champion. I don't know a whole lot about the current situation with the belt, where it's defended or how it's defended, what company I should say. But that is a little history on the Missouri Heavyweight Championship. Brings back some great memories and of going to the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis and checking out those matches. And speaking of kind of keeping that memories of childhood wrestling, Luke Lay asks if I have any memories of wrestling at the Chase and if I ever had the opportunity to speak to Larry Madisink. No, I have not had a chance. I shouldn't say that. I have had the chance. I've just not been able to take advantage of that chance to talk to Larry. He was the commentator on Wrestling at the Chase. Loved that as a kid. We would watch it on, I believe it was on Sunday mornings, it was still coming on. And then WWF Superstars came on, Superstars of Wrestling, that is. World Class was always on. So that those Sunday mornings or Saturday nights, I think, you know, KPLR started showing Wrestling at the Chase as far back, I believe, as the 1950s. And it just became a great show. It made its debut actually in 1959 from the Chase Hotel in downtown St. Louis. And KPLR was the local affiliate, the independent affiliate, Channel 11. And they ran the show for almost 25 years. And I remember the likes of Bruiser Brody, Ric Flair, Harley Race, the Funk Brothers, the Von Erichs, those, you know, and that was one of the first things because my brother and my dad watched wrestling all the time, and I wasn't into it at all. And then I started watching that, some of the WWF stuff. There was just a lot of great action going on, and, you know, it was so new and different to me, and it just kind of took off from there, and you know. So Wrestling at the Chase, I have some fond memories. I don't have any specific. I've kind of racked my brain trying to think of specific matches or moments, but I remember Larry Matisick very specifically. And then the ring announcer, who was, his name was Mickey Garagiola. I think I'm saying that right. He actually, I think my uncle went to high school with him or one of his brothers or something. So he knew him or knew of the family. So it was kind of fun watching because there would always talk about, you know, the good old days, if you will. And but yeah, definitely loved me some Wrestling at the Chase. And I still am hoping to make it up. I know Larry still does some stuff with wrestling up in the St. Louis area still. And hopefully we'll get to get up there and meet and chat with him at some point. Jake Haynes asks, who are my top 10 indie wrestlers in Southern Illinois and why? You know, I don't do a whole, I am the ring announcer for Stride Pro Wrestling. I run, you know, the Stride Pro, or I help run the Stride Pro Wrestling Facebook page. I don't want to narrow it down to my favorites. I don't want to show favoritism because I think that everyone who participates, comes out to Stride Pro Wrestling and wrestles, whether they're coming in from St. Louis, coming in from other parts of the country, a lot of them are here locally in Southern Illinois. I don't want to name favorites. I don't want to get anybody upset or hurt anyone's feelings. I think that everybody puts in a lot of hard work inside the ring, outside the ring. The trainees who are coming into the Stride School are doing a great job. I like everyone I see. You know, Jake is part of the Midwest Mafia with Red Daniels and now Big Roger Mathis. That threesome is going to be powerful in 2017. I have no doubt about that. Jay Spade and Joey O'Reilly are the tag team champions right now. You've got Heath Hatton as the heavyweight champion. Axe Allworth, the former champ. Farmer Billy Hills. Tony Flood. Jerry Travelstead is the legacy champion. You know, there's so many great guys, and the women are in there too. Sarah Summers and Alexa Flood, they do a great job. They're amazing men and women who are dedicated, committed, and love this business and get in there and give it their all. So, you know, I don't want to pick my favorite 10 because it's almost like trying to pick out, you know, your favorite kid. So I don't want to go that route. Jake had a second follow-up question, and it's, when is he going to get a chance to end my undefeated streak? That will never happen. I have wrestled one time, and it was 5 years ago this month, actually, and chances are I will not be ever stepping back in the ring. I'm 43 years old. I'm almost 44, and, you know, my time has come and gone. I will never say never, and I don't know that I want to be in the ring with the Hitman Jake Capone, because I think he would definitely put a hurt into me for sure. So thanks for asking that question, and I know I probably didn't give you the answer you wanted, but I do think that Midwest Mafia definitely going to be a threesome to watch here in Stride Pro Wrestling, and even, you know, beyond that, because I know they travel outside of the area as well. Speaking of Stride, Heath Hatton asks, who would I like to see in Stride in 2017? I know they bring in they brought in 2016. We had Cowboy Bob Orton come in and do a show. Madman Pondo was there for a show. I missed the Cowboy Bob Orton show, and I missed Daniel Eads came in October and did a show. And he is based out of Evansville, Indiana. I've seen Daniel one other time wrestle in person. I would love to see Daniel Eads come back and do a show with Stride. As far as any others, you know, I like the fact that we showcase at Stride the younger talent, the growing, developing guys and gals around the region, you know, the St. Louis area. We do bring in a lot of from the St. Louis market as well. So I think continue doing what we're doing, developing and growing our homegrown product, kind of like what I mentioned earlier about keeping wrestling relevant. It's having that talent base that is your own. And, you know, bringing in occasionally a WWE legend, perhaps. You know, I know in Pinckneyville they brought in Bushwhacker Luke, and I know that there are probably going to be some other legends coming through Southern Illinois in 2017. So, you know, it's fun to bring back for the nostalgia factor, but I am excited about who we have and what we have going on the roster right now. Red Daniel, speaking of the Midwest Mafia, he asks, who is the or who will be the biggest indie name the WWE signs in 2017? I have not really kept an eye on who they are watching right now. Who would I like it to be, I think, is where I'm going to go with this, and that's Chuck Taylor. Chuck Taylor is in Chikara Pro, and he actually tagged with Johnny Gargano, who is, of course, now on NXT, part of the NXT Tag Team Champions. But Chuck Taylor is a guy who I'm really kind of surprised had not been signed by WWE or TNA, for that matter. I think that he does a great job in the ring. He's good on the mic. I hope that he, if he wants that opportunity, and some of these men and women of the ring maybe don't necessarily want to jump from the indie stage and into the WWE or the developmental. But if he does, I hope that that opportunity comes to him. I know that there had been talks going on with Eddie Kingston. He, I think, went to TNA instead, though, Chad was telling me. But Eddie had a tryout. He was the former Chikara Grand Champion and did some other work in other independent promotions. I'd like to see him in WWE, too, or NXT. He's got that big brawler kind of style and rough and tumble. Princess Kimberly, who was the first podcast guest of 2016 here on My 1-2-3 Cents, I believe she has signed a developmental deal or some sort of deal with WWE, so good luck to her. And, you know, lots of great talent out there, and I think that there's going to be a lot still to come. Josh Petro asks, what is my favorite podcast to listen to? I've talked about this before, and I don't mind saying it. My favorite podcast is actually Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. He and his co-host, Conrad Thompson, do a great job of breaking down some of the history, some of the fun storylines and businesses and or aspects of the business. And it's a lot of fun to listen to. I also listen to The Art of Wrestling with Colt Cabana, The Ross Report, The Ric Flair Show. I would say The Ric Flair Show and Something to Wrestle With are the two I listen to every week. There's a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk who is not anything to do with wrestling. It's more of an entrepreneurial social media podcast. I listen to him, all of his shows. But, you know, Art of Wrestling, The Ross Report, Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast. I don't listen to those as regularly, but I do listen to them if they have a guest on that I want to hear. Of course, Greg Mahochko, who does the Nerds United podcast. He has some great shows out there, and Chad is actually going to have a new show that's going to be coming on and debuting on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network here in the very near future, and he actually, just a couple of minutes ago, sent a text. It's going to be called Positive Cynicism, so looking forward to hearing his take on things around the world, and I don't think he's really going to go wrestling at all. He's going to talk more about current events and other things going on in the world today. Devin Dinkins asks, or says, starts it off with a statement. Stephanie McMahon said that she thinks it's just a matter of time before women main event WrestleMania. We've already seen Iron Man matches and even Hell in a Cell this year. So with that in mind, what's the possibility of there being a women's Royal Rumble match in 2017 or 2018? I think it's a matter of time. I agree with Stephanie. I do think it'll be a matter of time before you have that main event at WrestleMania. I don't think it's going to happen in 2017 and probably not even 2018. I do think it is a possibility. As far as having their own Royal Rumble match, I kind of like the idea. I find it intriguing. And I don't think we'll ever see a day where you have a lot of women involved in the Royal Rumble with the opportunity to meet the WWE or Universal Heavyweight Champions. I don't think you'll see any more intergender matches just because kind of the evolution. I know back in the late 90s and 2000s, we had China who was getting in there and wrestling the guys. I don't think we're going to see an era like that again just because of the PG aspect of WWE. That was kind of the Attitude Era, was kind of, Katie bar the door, there's no holds barred. It was just a free-for-all, if you will. WWE is much more aware of the market conditions now. It's more business run and thought of and whatnot. So I just don't know how shareholders and whatnot, even though other companies are doing it, I just don't believe that we'll see a Kevin Owens versus Charlotte match, for example, for the Universal Championship. I do think in time we could very well see a Royal Rumble match. I think they need to beef up the women's division because right now they're kind of still spotlighting and highlighting a handful of the women on either show. But I do think that they could one day, definitely not in 2017, 2018, I would say more realistically, probably 19 or 20 by 2020, you may have enough women, quality women in there. And you could probably do a smaller scale. If you had a 15 or 20 woman Royal Rumble and brought back in a few names from the past, brought up some of the women from NXT, it would definitely work. And I think that one day it will become a concept, and I do like that idea. I haven't really thought of the women having their own Royal Rumble match, but it makes sense. Devin's second question is, do you think that Demolition will be inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2017? I do not. I think that they are definitely worthy and belong in the Hall of Fame, but they are a part of this lawsuit that has been filed. Over 51 wrestlers or estates of wrestlers has filed this lawsuit against WWE claiming neurological brain problems, brain damage through the years. And some of the people on the list never even worked for WWE, but they're really kind of the last man standing in terms of companies, so they get lumped into this lawsuit. I don't think the lawsuit's going to go anywhere, but I think as long as it's still pending and the litigation is out there and anyone on that list is not going to be brought in and inducted into the Hall of Fame, there are some Hall of Famers on the list, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, who are already in the Hall of Fame. I don't think that WWE is going to kick anyone out, although I think Snuka has kind of been removed after the whole incident with him going on right now. But King Kong Bundy, Ken Patera, Slick, Kamala, Adam Bomb, I'm not going to say necessarily Hall of Fame career, but those guys in particular are not in the Hall of Fame yet. And, I do think that they certainly do deserve to be in the Hall of Fame one day, but until this lawsuit is settled or something changes with that, I just don't see them extending the olive branch to anybody until it's all kind of resolved and fixed and put away. Jason asks, do you think Broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero will show up in WWE, and if so, will Vince let them have the same creative control? There's been a lot of speculation and talk and wonder on that. I think that anything is possible and we could one day see them back in WWE. I mean, time is kind of not necessarily on their side. They're both, I know Matt is in his 40s now. I don't know how further behind Jeff is in age. I think he's a couple of years younger at least. And that's not to say that it's over by any means. There are men in their 40s. I mean, Goldberg is in his 50s and still wrestling. So I think that if they do come in, it would be more of a special attraction. I don't see Vince giving them the same creative control. I think a lot of times fans get excited and passionate when someone signs and they think that they're going to have their same gimmick or same kind of storyline that they had with another company. The Bullet Club, for example, has changed and evolved since from what they were in Japan, for example, as to what they are being presented here on WWE TV. So I do think that there is a very small likelihood of it being, and they may not even bring them in as Broken Matt and Brother Nero. They may just simply bring them back as the Hardys because that's where they made their money with them. But I think TNA is losing out on a lot of opportunities to monetize on Broken Matt and Brother Nero, where Vince McMahon and company, I think, would have done a better job marketing and doing that. But again, there's not been a whole lot of leeway with the creative stuff. I know, you know, obviously Steve Austin and The Rock and guys in that era kind of changed the way things were being done. But I think there's such a stranglehold right now coming from creative or coming from Vince McMahon himself that I just don't see it being the same as it is right now with TNA, the way they're doing the Hardy Boys, the Broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero stuff versus how WWE would handle it. Last question comes from Jason. JD asks, if you could form a new 4 or 5 man stable in WWE today, who's in it and why? I thought about this question for a while, actually. And I know you said 4 or 5 man stable. My stable, what I am thinking I would do is bring in Kurt Angle to be the manager of this stable. And there's a fifth person that I would put in there possibly, but let me get through the top four that I would definitely have in there. Kurt Angle, keep in mind, is kind of the centerpiece manager guy, and not so much because of the American aspect of it, the patriotic side of it, but more of the athletic. This is a team of super athletes, so to speak. Dolph Ziggler, I would put in this stable. American Alpha, who are the current SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and Charlotte, who is the Raw Women's Champion. That would be my core four. I had flirted with the idea of also putting in Finn Balor, but I don't necessarily know that his, if they're going to go with the Demon King gimmick and continue on with that with him, I don't know that he would fit in with this class of four. So I'm going to keep it at this core four of Dolph Ziggler, American Alpha, and Charlotte, managed by Kurt Angle. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily form it right off the bat. I would bring Kurt Angle back in, have him do a couple of final shows, if you will, kind of winding down his in-ring career, and then transition him into that managerial role, because I think that he would be able to do it. And I think American Alpha specifically would be a perfect fit with Kurt Angle. And I would make this group a heel group. You know, Dolph Ziggler I always thought was better as a heel. American Alpha, I think you can tweak them and turn them into bad guys. And Charlotte, of course, is a natural. And then you have Kurt Angle on the mic for them and doing some of the talking for them. I just think that that would be a really great group of athletes who, you know, some of them get their time to shine and others don't. That would just kind of be the way I would put those four together and have that manager mouthpiece and bringing back in somebody with the pedigree, if you will, of Kurt Angle. I think they could go a long way. So thank you all who participated in Ask My 123 Cents. I'll be doing this again throughout the year. I like the idea and I like the interaction that we've had. So again, I appreciate the support. Be sure to stay tuned next week. Dan the Beast Severin will be on the show. And you know what? Happy New Year. Enjoy it. And let me know what's on your mind, who you want to hear from, who you want to hear from on the podcast and whatnot. And I will do my best to make it happen.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.